8:15 now, Ronald Serpas joins us, as he always does, Wednesday mornings, usually, to talk about crime. He's a professor of practice in the Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, former NOPD superintendent, head of the Washington State Police, Nashville City Police, numerous consulting roles as well. So with that, we welcome in Ronald Serpas. How you doing, Chief?
Tommy, I'm good. How are you today?
I'm all right. Let me ask you first, before we get to gun-free zones and consent decrees and all that, about crime in general. Because, you know, some people say the FBI stats are accurate. Others say they aren't. Some say crime is up. Some say crime is down. Some say it's underreported. I don't know. Tell me.
Well, I think the question is, there's two ways the government measures crime for at least the last 50 years. One is the FBI report, which has the benefit of being almost 100 years old. It can get to the state level and it can get to a city level. The problem with the FBI report is we know that only about half of the crimes in a community are committed are reported to the FBI. The government produces a separate report on crime perceptions called the National Crime Victimization Survey that interviews over 1,000 randomly selected people around the country, identifying those who have been the victim of a crime, and it talks about a nationwide perception of crime. So here's what we have. As a police chief, you know you got to deal with both of those facts. We know from Pew Research studies recently done in my practical experience, 7 out of 10 citizens understand crime from what they hear, Tommy. You ready for this? They understand crime from what they hear from their friends, their family, and their neighbors, and what they see on local news. And not to start a fight, but the Pew Research data and other data continues to point out that citizens are more likely to put trust and faith in what law enforcement tells them is the crime situation as opposed to politicians. Wrapping this up in a bow, you can't say the world is completely known because of the FBI, because it's missing so much information as the nature of the way crime is found. You can't say the whole world is correct because of the NCVS, because it's actually across the nation and it doesn't come to a city. You are not using your best thinking cap when you go into meetings if you only talk about one as if the other doesn't exist. You need to recognize both.
So, with all that being said,
people are still afraid of crime in the country. In fact, they're quite afraid of crime in the country. Here in New Orleans, you have another bellwether against that. In New Orleans, you can use crime data from the FBI, but you don't have the NCVS National Survey, so you do your own survey, and that's what the New Orleans Crime Coalition has been doing since 2009. The latest version of the New Orleens Crime Coalition from June of 2024 says 56% of New Orleanians don't feel safe. So you can't say, you know, it really comes down to this as an experienced chief, Tommy. If you go into a room of people and say, my data says you're safe, and they say, well, Bob got arrested for shooting Billy. Billy's in a wheelchair for the rest of his life. My mama's car got broke into. I don't care what your numbers say. And that's where I try to advise our clients and my friends and mentees. If you go tell people crime's going down and they think it's going up, they're going to think you're illegitimate. So talk to people about where they live, what they're going through, and don't rely on these crime numbers, particularly the FBI, because it's half off all the time. Final point, Tommy. Crime data reported by the government lags citizen perception by months. So sometimes you could be talking about the exact opposite. Hey, crime is going up, and citizens would be, well, yeah, 6 months ago we felt that way, but today we feel differently. You got to talk to people where they live. These data points are interesting, but they're not, as a legal term would be, dispositive.
So
they give information. They don't make decisions.
When it comes to perception of crime, though, you know, they say with the news business, if it bleeds, it leads, and the violent crimes get the most attention. How do you distinguish what people's perception is from the reality of whether or not they're safe? If you understand what I'm saying.
Absolutely. That's why I think effective police chiefs go into the community and meet people directly. Tommy, here's another sad fact in America. If murder's down, that is good news, right? Unequivocally, murder's down. Murder is by shooting someone with a gun and killing them. In your community, there's generally 3 to 5 other people who got shot and survived. So the fact that murder is going down doesn't necessarily mean gun violence is going down. Quite often, it does not mean gun violence has changed on that 3 to 5 ratio. That means you got people who are living with lifelong injuries. That means you got people who have seen things in front of them that scare them for a really, really long time. So police chiefs who, I was a data-driven guy, but I was taught well by very smart people. You don't go into a room and say, you must be safe. FBI says crime is going down. Mm-hmm. That's a loser. That's a loser. You'll lose every time.
Shootings would be a more accurate metric than would be murders.
It depends on how you ask the question. The most accurate metric is not those crimes. It's how many people's cars were broken into? How many people had to miss a day of work because someone broke their window? How many people had a cyber identity theft? How many people had their pockets picked? How many people went into a bar room to have a good time and somebody attacked them and beat them up? We focus on murder because it's the most heinous crime, as we should, but it's the smallest number of crimes in a community. There's no reflection that they're not dangerous, but people perceive crime in so many other ways that it doesn't have anything to do with that one number of murder. In a place like New Orleans or other tourist cities, murders tend to give an aura of fear that affects tourism. But at the end of the day, people understand crime from what they hear from their friends and their neighbors and their family. And whatever that crime is real to them. And to ignore it because an FBI report said crime's down in the city puts you on the other side of that debate, and you really can't ever win that.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back, and we'll talk about the permitless carry in a French Quarter and what they're trying to do with a carve-out zone and all that. And also about ever since this permitless carry went into effect, have we seen any upticks in any types of shootings, anything like that? 822 traffic now, WWL. 825, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Ronald Surpass, Professor, Practice Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, former NOPD superintendent. The plans for that carve-out for a gun-free zone in a French Quarter with the permitless carry is not going so well, and the Attorney General's got involved, Blake Miguez has gotten involved. But beyond that, because that's going to play out in the political process, right? What has my concern when it came to permitless carry was, I think if you're going to carry a gun, you should take a concealed carry class so you know what you're getting into and you know how to use that gun before you start strapping it onto your hip. I was concerned that it would become Dodge City, but since that law went into effect, is it too soon to tell, Chief, if that's had any effect at all around the state?
I think it's too soon to tell, but I think we can also count on the fact, and this isn't an attack, it's just what I've seen around the country. Mm-hmm. If something was to occur with a carrying concealed permit holder in a way that could be newsworthy in any possible angle, mm-hmm. wouldn't you expect that would be all over the news?
You would think.
Yeah, so I think that tells us a little something. I do believe that nothing changed on a couple regards. One, in the French Quarter, any business or any residence can placard their front door with a sign that says no firearms allowed. And that's the law. You have to follow it. You can't go into a bar room with a gun anyway. You can go into a restaurant with a gun, but you can't be intoxicated with a gun, just like you're not supposed to be intoxicated when you drive. Mm-hmm. I just don't see yet. I also understand this, the third point. I also understand from people I know in and around the police department that police officers, while they may not be able to start a reasonable suspicion case on a gun by itself, fair enough, that's what the law really talks about. But if they have a reasonable suspicion that Tommy and Ronnie are dealing drugs and they build a case based on that and they find a gun on us and we don't have a right to have it, mm-hmm. we're getting arrested for it. Or, as the state statute has always been, if you and I are doing something, the police engage us as a result of finding out that we didn't really do anything wrong, but we had a weapon, the law compels that I give that back to you unless the law prescribes it because you're a convicted felon in possession. So some of this has been real change in allowing more space to use it, but some of the underlying principles of how you investigate suspicious behavior was impacted but not stopped. And you still can't be drunk in a barroom with a gun, and you can still put a sign up on your door saying, at my jewelry store on Royal Street, you can't bring a gun in here, and that law doesn't provide for the person with the gun to overrule your decision as an owner of that property.
Let's talk real quick about consent decree and the city mm-hmm. getting out of it and progress being made there.
Well, I think it looks good that the city and the DOJ decided to go forward and ask to come out and go into the two-year review period, if you will. But I still think, if I remember right, there's other plaintiffs who will have a right to give their opinion to the judge, and then the judge will make a decision. The bottom line is, if the judge decides to allow the NOPD to move to the next step, which is continuing compliance or words like that, They got another 2 years with less oversight, but they still got another 2 years of oversight. The fact that they're at this point, I think we should celebrate. I mean, I think that's great for the men and women of the department who have worked through this for the last, 10, 11 years. But it doesn't mean it's over. It just means that you have two more years to prove it with not as much oversight. So it's kind of like you're proving it a little bit on your own and you're going to have some oversight. But here's the issue, Tommy, that's been going on around the country since all this started in the Obama administration. How much are these cities paying for these monitors who are charging several hundred dollars an hour and millions of dollars? There needs to be a way to ensure constitutional policing, but without having these cabin industries of retired U.S. attorneys or whomever that are charging millions and millions of dollars to come in here and look at cities around the country. That's the issue. Not that we don't want policing constitutional. We just got to find out a way to make it reasonable for the city that's paying.
Thank you, Chief. Appreciate your time. Ronald Serpas, Professor of Practice, Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, former NOPD Superintendent. Mayor Cantrell introduced her budget yesterday to the City Council. We'll get J.P. Morrell's thoughts on that. And I got a story for you about someone's accused in a hit and run and something that she was saying to somebody on the phone before she allegedly ran over this person. It's going to shock you. We'll be back right now. Time for WWL First News.